Good morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. Live in the Allstate studio on the seventh floor of the Trib Tower. We are here until 5 a.m. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And Steve Cochran, the great Steve Cochran, at 6 for your morning drive. It's Monday morning. Good morning, everybody. Good week. Weekday morning. It's also Martin Luther King Day. And pay respect to the man. It's Monday, so my dad will be calling in to tell a joke a little bit later on. And it's the time for the Monday morning movie reviews. Back into our routine. Last week we did a special full show dedicated to the best, the worst, and everything in between for the year 2016 in movies. And now we're getting back to our regular routine, reviewing all the new movies and talking about the box office. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and much more join me every Monday morning to talk about the new movies. And we got a bunch, actually, to talk about this week. So let's welcome these guys to the show. And it's Eric. Hello, Eric.
Hello.
And Colin. Hey, Colin.
Hello there.
Welcome back, gentlemen. All righty then. Now, Eric, before we get started, you next week you will be in Sundance. When do you leave?
I'm leaving on Thursday.
Okay. And you're going to be there for how long? A week?
Yeah, 6 days.
6 days?
Yeah.
Okay. And how many movies are you planning on seeing?
Somewhere in the vicinity of 30 right now. Depending on how tired I get, some of those midnight shows tend to sometimes fall off the wayside. But
right. All right. So, like, as far as next week at this time goes, we're not sure when we're going to hear from you, right? You might be at a midnight movie. You might, it just depends on whether you're going to join us live or we're going to, you know, do something else.
Yeah. It'll either be when we were, do our segment here, yeah, or it'll be sometime during the course of the show.
Okay. All right. There you go. We'll have fun.
Yeah, I hope so.
All right. So let's get to it, shall we? Now, I understand that neither of you went to go see The Bye Bye Man.
No.
I had every intention of seeing it today, and I got a little, or no, the website I used for the showtime, either I got confused or it gave me the wrong showtime, but I still haven't come back to verify that. But so I got, basically did not get at the theater at the right time, so I did not see it. But while I was there, I did go see Singing in the Rain at 2 p.m.
Oh.
What the heck, you know?
Was that fun?
Yeah, of course. Yeah. I mean, what can you say? You know, one of the greatest movies ever. And, it was pretty cool for TCM to, put it out this weekend or this today, I guess.
It was Thursday and Sunday.
Okay.
And then I think they're doing it one more time because we were at my screening of Children of Men Tuesday.
Yeah.
We were talking about how we wanted to do Singing in the Rain for February in honor of Debbie Reynolds, but it's, the Fathom people have it.
Right.
So we couldn't get it for our screening. And so
I thought you did it already.
No.
Point. You didn't? Okay.
No, we've never done, I don't think we've ever done a musical, which is ridiculous. Oh. All That Jazz. That's,
okay, yeah.
I mean, that's as close to a musical as we've ever gotten. But anyway, so a woman in the audience said, yeah, I'm going two times this week to see Cena.
Okay.
So, well, that's cool.
Yeah.
I do want to mention this. I didn't get a chance to see it, and I think it's only going to be 1 week. I didn't have time this weekend, but La La Land is playing in IMAX. And I'm very disappointed I didn't get a chance to see it. But for the people who are interested in seeing La La Land, which you should because it was all on all three of us, and it was in your top, everybody's top 10, right?
Yeah.
Okay. It was my number one. And to see that movie in IMAX would be just amazing. So it's playing in IMAX, and I think it's only this week. I'm pretty sure. So if you get a chance and you want to see La La Land, IMAX is a great way to see it. So
it was great to see it Singing in the Rain in a multiplex. I went to the Ford City, and the scene in the movie when they're talking about, oh, what is sound going to do for our industry? And you can hear the film next door bleeding into the theater. Like, yeah, that's what it's going to do. That's where we're at now.
That's great. All right. Well, let's get to it. I did see The Bye Bye Man. So I will tell you about it. There's not much to tell. Do you know who this director is, Stacey Tytle? You familiar with her?
She directed The Last Supper.
Yes. Like, what happened? What, where, huh?
Exactly.
So, yeah. So I wasn't even, I wasn't aware of her because after I saw the movie, I looked her up. And I was like, she did The Last Supper?
Yeah.
It was 22 years ago.
Yeah.
And it's a good movie, The Last Supper. I really enjoyed that film. So
yeah, more prevalent than that.
Well, yeah. 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 All right. Well, here's the deal. I can get this one out of the way really, really quickly. It's about these three buddies, friends, girlfriend and a guy and another guy move into a house. The college students move into a house, and they find one of the guys finds this this drawer in a bureau that has this stuff written all over it. And ultimately what it comes down to is there's this being that will pop up into your life and do horrible things to you called the Bye-Bye Man if you say his name or think his name. And then all, you know, hell breaks loose and bad CGI and, you know, everything that you would come to expect from this type of film. It is the bad CGI is one thing. It is a total. I mean, obviously, anybody who has seen the trailer for this movie or read about it, if you don't think of Candyman, then there's something wrong with you because it's a total ripoff of Candyman. But more often than not, it's a ripoff of the Freddy Krueger movies, the Nightmare on Elm Street movies. I do like the fact that the Bye Bye Man likes to like photobomb people's selfies. I think that's funny. And the Bye-Bye Man, by the way, is portrayed by Doug Jones. So there's some interesting physical stuff because that's all that guy does. That's all that guy does. Yeah. I guess Guillermo del Toro wasn't working, so he got a gig. And you know, the young cast is, you know, they're okay. There's a girl in the movie, and I can't remember her name, but she is like a has like psychic powers. Jenna Connell is her name. And I don't know her from anything, but she's really, I think she's pretty cool. She's very good looking and really interesting and cool and very, very cool in the movie. Now, it's dumb, and they try to add these underlying themes, like Columbine is mentioned a couple of times. They try to add these underlying themes of mass death in the world of teenagers and young adults. But it doesn't really seem to work. Carrie Ann Moss is in this. Not sure why. There's another person I haven't seen in, you know, like, what was the last thing Carrie Ann Moss was in? I don't even remember. So, yeah, I can't remember.
Is there a reason they call him the Bye-Bye Man other than that, like, when he shows up, you go bye-bye?
That's pretty much it.
Okay.
And I don't know, are you guys aware of who else is in this movie? Of who makes, like, a cameo in it?
Oh, I heard, I've seen this on Twitter.
Are you, Colin, are you aware?
Well, I'm looking at the cast list on IMDb right now. Is it Faye Dunaway?
It's Faye Dunaway.
Yeah.
Faye Dunaway is in two scenes in this movie. I was like, what the hell? What? What? So I don't know. She plays like a widow who, you know, gives very weird warnings. And she plays like the crazy old lady. In the horror.
Did she divorce the Bye-Bye Man and that's why he's so mad?
oh, by the way, Dan tells me that Carrie Ann Moss stars in Netflix superhero stuff. Like, she's in like Jessica Jones and all that stuff.
Oh, okay.
So she's part of that universe now, Dan? She's in the Netflix Marvel universe. Well, good for her. I like Carrie Ann Moss.
Yeah, that's a gig.
Yeah, it is a gig. Okay, this is your typical Bye-Bye Man is your typical, you know, standard PG-13. You know, let's get a bunch of attractive, you know, teenagers in a movie and kill them off in PG-13 style. And it's your typical January horror movie release. I remember last year at this time, if you guys remember, The Boy was released, I think.
And The Forest.
And The Forest. Those both came out right around the same time. And this is just on that level. It is your standard PG-13 horror movie for, you know, your weekend in January. And although this one has Faye Dunaway in it for some.
You know, I'll tell you what wasn't with us last January.
What?
That was Colin.
That's right.
Oh, yeah. Colin was off.
Yeah. So welcome back to January.
Yeah.
So, yeah.
I bet you missed January, didn't you?
Oh, I got a January doozy to review tonight.
All right. Well, here, let's take a break. We call that a tease in the business.
Yeah.
So I do not recommend Bye-Bye Man. It's a bad film. Don't see it. It sucks. Okay. Eric, Colin, hang on, guys. We are going to take a break here, and when we come back after the news, we've got all the new movies left to review. So don't see Bye-Bye Man because it's poo-poo man. All right, we'll take a break, and we'll come back with more after the news on WGN. Hey, welcome back to the show, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. It's Monday morning. That means my dad will call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're reviewing the new movies here on WGN. Colin and Eric are here, as they are every week, and we've got a bunch of new movies to review. I reviewed the new horror film, The Bye-Bye Man, before the break, and it's not good. We are not recommending it. So let's get back to it, and here is Eric. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And Colin. Colin, welcome back.
Hello there.
All right, before the break, Colin, you mentioned that you had another January doozy to review, and I'm assuming it's Monster Trucks.
It is Monster Trucks.
All right, let's hear about it.
All right, yeah. So this is a film where they came up with the title first and then worked the story around that. It's a story about a teenager named Trip, played by Lucas Till, who I guess plays Havoc in the X-Men movies. I don't know what that means anymore, but okay. Anyway, he lives in a small town, is obsessed with building this truck so he can drive away. over yonder are scientists who have discovered a new form of creature in the water while they were drilling for oil, and they find three of them. One of them escapes and makes his way to Trip's garage, and this is a slimy octopus-like creature with a cute little face, not unlike the face of the dragon in How to Train Your Dragon.
So, yeah, in the trailer, Colin, that's what it looks like. They patterned it after that.
Pretty much, yeah. In an effort to hide from the mean corporate officials and bounty hunters, the creature hides under Trip's truck when they come looking for him, and then eventually slithers his way into the gears and into the engine of the truck and basically becomes the truck's motor. thereby voluntarily enslaving itself to Trip's every whim. Anytime Trip wants to go somewhere, he takes his monster truck out for a drive. Jane Levy of Don't Breathe plays the love interest. Unfortunately, there's a lot of people wasted here. Barry Pepper plays the sheriff, who's the new boyfriend of Trip's mom, played by Amy Ryan.
I can't believe this cast. I swear to God. I'm looking at the cast list. I can't believe it.
Yeah. Thomas Lennon plays the top scientist. Danny Glover plays a wheelchair-bound mechanic. Yeah. And then, of course, you got Rob Lowe playing the big corporate bad guy, and you can tell he's a bad guy because he has a southern accent.
Uh-oh.
Even though the film takes place in North Dakota. So this is from, so funny. When I went to see this, I went to the 10 a.m. screening last weekend, and I had never seen a trailer for the film, and I swear when I looked on the poster on IMDb, I thought I was going to see an animated film. Because it's from the director, it's from Chris Wedge, who directed Ice Age, Robots, and Epic. And you look at the poster, it's an animated poster. It's not a, you know, if you look at the guy in the truck that they animated, it doesn't look a thing like Lucas Till. So very strange, just kind of waiting for the animation to kick in and noticing about 5 or 10 minutes in, like, oh, this is a live action. This is going to be a live action all the way through. I think it would have been better off if it was animated. Would have made a lot more sense. But as it is, it's a movie that's kind of trying to be a teenage E.T., except Lucas Till is not the most charming actor in the world in this thing. It's really hard to really get emotionally invested in him because he's kind of just this teenage doofus, and I don't mean that in an endearing way. And, you know, it also tries to have an environmental message, but yet it's perfectly fine with this animal being completely enslaved for much of the film. I think by the end of the film, this kid should be arrested for vehicular manslaughter with the chase scene at the end. So I think some little kids are, you know, might find it fun. I mean, Monster Truck, you know, you can't go wrong there when you're taking your, you know, a 7 or 8 year old to a film whose tastes aren't quite developed yet. But I think adults are going to have a hard time sitting through this thing and enjoying themselves. I think I was checking my watch quite a bit. It's not very well written, and like I said, it feels like they came up with the title first because the film itself is just kind of, it feels kind of slapped together and forced into being made because somebody thought, hey, let's make this movie and try to make it work. It really doesn't. It's quite a bad kids film. And I guess I can understand the story now that they had a film and then they screened it and this monster was so scary that it terrified kids and that they had to go back and rework the entire monster in the film and reshoot a lot of stuff. And it kind of shows. So yeah, this is a pretty bad movie and I recommend parents stick to the other stuff that's out there for kids. You know, go see Moana again. I guess if you have to go see Sing, fine. It's better than this. It's not that great, but it's better than this. So, yeah.
Okay.
Monster Trucks.
Welcome.
My first film of 2017.
You know, welcome back to January, Colin.
Yeah, great. Yeah.
All right. Monster Trucks. We quickly tell that story one more time again. On the air here about the time I went to go see Kubo.
Oh yeah.
I went to go see Kubo and the Two Strings, and behind me was sitting a gentleman with his three daughters, young girls, and between the ages of maybe 5 and 10. And so we're sitting in front of them and they're behind us, and the lights go down and they show the first trailer, and the first trailer is for Trolls, and so they show Trolls, oh, look, it's all, hey, Justin Timberlake, hey, Anna Kendrick, and it's, you know, they show the trailer. The trailer ends, and the little girls go, Daddy, Daddy, can we see that? Oh, I want to see that. Can we see that? And the dad goes, yes, of course, sure, yeah, we'll go. Okay, the next trailer was for Storks. And they show the wacky trailer for Storks, and, oh, they get flying around, busting into walls and all this. Oh, ha, 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 ha. Trailer ends, and the little girls go, hey, Daddy, can we see that one? I really want to see that one. Can we go see that one? And the dad goes, yes, of course, yes, we'll go, of course, yes, girls. And then the next trailer is for Monster Trucks. And they show the trailer for Monster Trucks, and blah, 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 it ends, and before the little girls can say anything, the dad goes, not a chance. So that was my first exposure to Monster Trucks. And if it's any indication of the kind of money it made over the weekend, it made $10.5
million. Oh, Nick, there's more to that story than you even know.
Oh, is there really?
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Well, we'll get to that later.
Yeah.
We'll get to that later. Okay, Monster Trucks, a big no from Colin. Colin, thank you for biting the bullet on that one.
Sure.
All right. Well, Eric.
Yeah.
Why don't you tell us about Patriots Day?
Okay, well, this is the latest effort from director Peter Berg and collaborating with Mark Wahlberg. They had collaborated twice before on Lone Survivor, based on a true story, and Deepwater Horizon, based on a true story. And this goes 3 for 3 because this is a story about the 2013 Boston Marathon bombing. In the movie, Mark Wahlberg plays a cop, a detective who's on suspension, who basically has to serve his time doing beat work, and he gets assigned to the marathon on that day. At the beginning of the movie, we meet several people who we're not quite sure exactly how they're going to fit into the events of this day, unless you're a complete student of history, but we meet several people in the setup, and then the bombing occurs, and the chaos of the day, and then it becomes an investigation into exactly who's responsible for this, you know, where the geography of everything, where these bombers came from, where they might have gone, and then we shift focus to the bombers themselves. And exactly, you know, where they're sort of how they went about their day, planning their getaway, and how all of these events basically come to fruition. John Goodman plays high up, I don't know, Boston chief or
commissioner,
chief or something
he's
like
a
that.
Commissioner.
Commissioner, right, okay. Kevin Bacon plays the FBI agent who's brought in to take charge of the case. And a number of other people. Michelle Monaghan plays Mark Wahlberg's wife, a very thankless role. So Peter Berg at times has been a very technically proficient filmmaker at times. I think he's done some good work. I think he's done lately some lesser works. A movie like Lone Survivor is a very technically proficient film, but kind of morally questionable. Is it sort of like Passion of the Christ for, you know, our soldiers, and just the way that, you know, sort of watching the carnage of that film take place. And now we get to Patriots Day, which is, you know, it, I mean, it starts off with the fact that Mark Wahlberg's character is a composite. He's talked about this in interviews, where he's basically a composite character of like three different people. And one of the biggest problems with this film is that it goes so out of its way to put this character, who is, again, a composite, right in the center of every major action that occurs during this day. He's, you know, he's right there, just right up the street from the bombing. He gets, at one point in what I think is maybe the most ridiculous scene of the movie, he actually gets called back in to be like Google Maps, where he's supposed to identify exactly where the some of the stores are on this street where the bombers might have been walking past, because they've recreated the entire street in chalk, and they've got bloody clothing placed all over the place. And they call this beat cop in, essentially, to get a better sense of where the neighborhood is. It's a pretty ridiculous scene. And then he's involved with the kidnapping, this gentleman that's kidnapped by the two bombers. He's on the scene there. He's the guy that finds one of the bombers in the boat that we all learned about. So there's just something really kind of weird about the fact that they wanted to make Mark Wahlberg the hero. At one point, he's the only cop in Boston searching for anybody at night, which is another weird scene. And, you know, ultimately, this film is just kind of not, it's just kind of there. It's not necessarily incredibly involving. I think the movie, right after the bombing, the movie begins to pick up steam as it begins to focus on the investigation, when Kevin Bacon and John Goodman there and arguing about whether they're going to release the photos and stuff. That, you know, there's some interesting stuff there, but it's so kind of shoved in there and kind of quickly done that it just keeps wanting to get back to Wahlberg. And there are just things in this movie that really just kind of bothered me. Like very early on in the movie, one of the characters that we're introduced to, that we're not quite, again, quite sure why we're introduced to, until you see that his leg is hanging over the bed. And I'm just like, he's not going to be one of the guys that loses his leg, is he? And sure enough, he is. So, like, choices like that, just really just kind of like, what are you doing, you know, making this movie? Like, what kind of, what are you trying to, you know, do with this film? And it's, for me, there's one really, really good scene in the movie that involves an interrogation of the bomber's wife that I think is a really good and striking scene. And again, just way too short, because they got to get back to Wahlberg being the hero of this movie. So ultimately, it's just a movie that's kind of there. Of the three movies that the two of them have done, this is by far the weakest.
Okay, we got to take a break, and I'll tell you what I thought of it. And Colin, you missed it, right?
Yeah, I didn't get to it.
Okay. I will tell you what I thought of Patriots Day after we take this break on the movie reviews right here on WGN. Placing a loved one in a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. You deserve only the best care for your loved one in return. Sadly, nursing home negligence is real, and it's a serious problem. Neglect and abuse of the elderly happen every day. The law firm of Conasec & Dillon wants you to know that nursing home negligence can cause serious life-threatening medical conditions like dehydration and malnutrition, fractures, infections, pressure sores, and even death. If you suspect a loved one is a victim of negligence or abuse in a nursing home, call Conasec & Dillon. The law firm of Conasec & Dillon will advise and help your family through the painful ordeal of injuries or death caused by nursing home negligence. Conasec & Dillon understands that entrusting a loved one to a nursing home is one of life's most difficult decisions. Protect your loved ones. Call Conasec & Dillon at 630-262-9655. Consultations are always free. Call Conasec & Dillon, 630-262-9655. Welcome back, everybody. Hi, Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. How you doing? We're live in the Allstate Studio on the 7th floor of the Trip Tower here till 5 o'clock. And we're reviewing the new movies. It's Monday, so that means we have the movie reviews. It's Monday, which also means my dad will call in and tell a joke, because it's a jokey time. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, and even more join me every Monday morning to talk about the movies. And here is Eric and Colin. Welcome back, guys.
Hello.
Okay, before the break, Eric told us about Patriots Day. A film that you were not fond of. I liked it more than you did. I can see your points, though, especially in terms of the way that they use Wahlberg's character. And, you know, in these three films that these guys have made together, Peter Berg and Mark Wahlberg, each movie, the Wahlberg hero character is given a lot more to, like, he becomes like the focus of the movie. Like Lone Survivor was about the unit mostly, you know? And then Deepwater Horizon, they started to focus more on Wahlberg. This one is all about Wahlberg. And I agree with you, that doesn't make it doesn't make any sense. And it just seems to be that's, you know, if they continue to make these kind of movies, it's going to, at one point, you know, maybe if they make a fifth one, you know, in a row, it'll be a one-man show with just Wahlberg on stage.
Yeah.
Now, having said that, and I agree with a lot of your points, the interrogation scene of the wife is terrific. And I agree with you. I think that's the best scene in the movie. But I liked it more than you did. I think it's a well-made movie. There are times when it's really compelling. And I liked the different points of view that Peter Berg took and shifting the focus from character to character. Obviously, Wahlberg being the center of the movie. John Goodman is a national treasure, and I can't wait to see the damn King Kong movie just because of him. And, you know, the stuff with them and Kevin Bacon, all that stuff I liked. The action sequences, I think, are put together. The bombing itself, I thought, was handled well. And overall, I think it's fine. And like you said, Eric, I mean, you know, it's like, oh, it's there.
Yeah,
it is. It's just there. But I mean, I don't think it's as bad as you do. And I was compelled by a good portion of it.
One of the things that I think actually decreases just how compelling it is at times, this movie seemed to have been put together pretty quickly. And there are times when Berg loves to go to, like, the actual footage stuff.
Yeah.
And there's moments during the bombing where you could tell that he's using stock footage from moments of the tragedy. And it's, you know, it's really distracting. At times, you know, just like if you want to do, you know, this sort of this epic retelling of this really horrible event, then do it yourself. Don't rely on the footage. I mean, there's another movie, two in a row now, where he's at the end of the movie, we get like a 10-minute recap of the survivors and stuff like that, which is, you know, cool in a way. But I just like, you know, like, do it yourself, dude.
Okay. Yeah, it didn't bother me as much as it bothered you. I thought it was, I mean, I think people will be entertained by this movie, and I think a lot of people will probably find it pretty compelling. I did for the most part. It's a little long. I'd have cut maybe 15 minutes out of it. But, I mean, your main complaint, Eric, about the Wahlberg character is absolutely right. It's absolutely justified, and I agree with you 100% on that, although I liked it more than you did. So, okay, so let's go on, shall we?
Mm-hmm.
And all right, Colin, why don't you tell us about 20th Century Women?
All right. Well, this is from director Mike Mills, and I'm not talking about the bass player of REM, but the director of Thumbsucker and Beginners. And this is another coming-of-age tale of sorts. It takes place in the late 70s?
79, yeah.
79, okay. Yep. And Annette Bening plays a single mom to a teenager named Jamie, who, you know, doesn't have much of a male influence in his life. His mom has tenants who live in their house, both female, and both are, you know, products of the changing world around her that she doesn't quite understand. Greta Gerwig plays a girl who is into punk music, and Ellie Fanning plays a kind of promiscuous girl who has a very platonic relationship with her teenage son, who's played by Lucas Jade Zuman. And as soon as his mom has these two girls trying to teach and instill female values into him so that he'll grow up knowing how to treat women. Billy Crudup plays a kind of hippie stuck in his own time, and he's kind of the handyman who's around all the time and is also there to be the male influence in Jamie's life, but he's more still just kind of another female influence, really, because he's hardly the alpha male. So so this is kind of a companion piece to Mills' last film, Beginners, which was sort of about his dad. This movie appears to be sort of about his mom. And I like this movie more, if for no other reason than the dog doesn't do any, it doesn't have any narration or dialogue. Like I said, it's a coming of age film about a teenager who learns a lot of cool things about the music at that time. He becomes a big Talking Heads fan, and as somebody in high school at the age of 14 who is a big Talking Heads fan, I can totally relate to this film and feeling like an outsider from everybody else, especially when I got into them as they were breaking up. But this movie does hit a few personal spots for me, you know, as somebody who seems to have had more female influence, more female friends in my life than male friends. You know, this is a movie that his themes kind of hit home with me. I think Mills does a good job of exploring that time and really nailing down a lot of the thoughts and attitudes of that period. I will say that in terms of his filmmaking, the film's aesthetic is kind of, it's almost like short attention span, where, you know, every scene is like a minute or less than a minute. Or at least for the last hour, I just started noticing that. And that makes it kind of hard to be really emotionally invested into these characters and the story. It's a little jumbled and a little awkwardly structured. But the characters that are here, I really quite like. And I feel like Mills is coming from a real personal place here. I think Annette Bening is really terrific. And I generally just like the whole cast. So this is a movie that is a very good coming-of-age film, but a really good film about the late 70s. And so, based on that and the performances of this film, I do recommend it, even though I got some qualms with it in terms of its structure.
Okay. All right. We'll find out what Eric thinks, and we'll find out what I think, too, after we take a break for the news. Hang on, guys. Eric and Colin will hang on. We'll take a break. We got the news coming up, and then you'll find out what Eric thought of 20th Century Women, what I thought of 20th Century Women. And then we've got a review of Live by Night, which is Ben Affleck's new movie. That's all coming up right here on the Monday Morning Movie Reviews with Nick DiCilio, and we'll take a break on WGN. Morning, everybody. How you doing? Nick DiCilio here on 720 WGN. I'm your overnight dude every weekday morning, 2 a.m. to 5 a.m. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trib Tower. We're here till 5 o'clock. Steve Grzanich with the opening bell at 5. And to kick off your work week Monday morning, 6 a.m., it's Steve Cochran. Hi, everybody. We are back, and it's Monday, which means we're in the middle of the Monday Morning Movie Reviews, and my dad will be calling in to tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we're going to be talking about, in honor of the fact that there are now going to be new tokens for the board game Monopoly, we're going to talk about that and talk about other great board games and reminisce a little bit about that stuff, too. So there you go. Our phone number is 312-981-7200. You can check us out on Twitter, at Nick D Show. Follow us there. Best way to stay connected is on our Facebook page. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. It's interactive. It's constantly updated. Whatever's happening on the show is happening on the Facebook page. Facebook.com/Nick D Show. All right. Before the break, we were talking about 20th Century Women. Colin told us what he thought of it, and we welcome these guys back. Welcome back, guys.
Thank you.
All right. So 20th Century Women, Colin, you're recommending it. Eric, what did you think?
Well, this is a film that did not hit home with me on any level, this being any kind of companion piece to Mike Mills' previous work is also not a good indicator for me. I did not like Thumbsucker. I was not a particular fan of Beginners. This film, you know, being set in the 70s and obviously has this sort of strong feminist vibe that it's going for. The feminist movement was really taking steam at this time, and building steam at this time. And even though I really like the established setup of this movie, the idea of a mother engaging other women to help raise her young son and give him this new perspective on life, I think is a great premise for a film. The problem is that I think if this movie is a companion piece to anything, it's actually Captain Fantastic. And I think that, as far as equality is concerned, Mike Mills has made a film that shows that a female version of that movie can be every bit as pretentious and unwatchable as that film actually is. I really really started to lose steam on this movie very early, and it only got increasingly so. And Colin, I think, kind of hit upon some of the structure choices towards the back half of this movie, just montages and moving on. You know, the way this, it's structured with different characters, and it almost seems to be, it starts to become more about them than the boy. There's a lot of characters in this movie that just start registering as very unlikable, and all kind of full of themselves. Ned Benning begins to just kind of barely register, which is something you can really say for Ned Benning, in anything. Sort of the worst traits of Greta Gerwig are on display here. I don't think the kid is very good. I really, really, really did not like this movie.
Okay. I totally disagree with you, Eric. Here's the deal. Let me just say this. I was that kid's age in 1979. So the main character in this movie, I was that age at that time. And it captures that time perfectly. Not just from the soundtrack, which is great. The soundtrack to this movie is great. But it captures the time, the feeling, what it looked like, what it felt like. I was not a skateboarder, I will tell you that. But a lot of what this kid goes through, and I had, you know, when I was growing up, I had both of my parents and everything. And so it's a completely different thing. And I'm an only child. I didn't live in a big crazy house that was being refurbished by a goofball. And I had a lot of, male friends when I was growing up. And so, this experience, a specific experience that this kid goes through is different than what I went through. But I got to say, they captured the time and the place perfectly. I thought Annette Bening was terrific. I thought she was absolutely terrific in this movie. I thought Greta Gerwig was good. I liked Al Fanning, Billy Crudup, doing the Billy Crudup thing. And, and the kid, I thought the kid was fine. Now, is it a perfect movie? Absolutely not. I actually found the structure to be kind of interesting, how they were going back and forth between each character and telling you what their background was and when they were born and giving them their history. I liked that, I did, and I don't think it stole focus from anything. I think it became an ensemble movie, which I think is what it always was. I mean, obviously the lead in the film, is the kid, but like Annette Bening is the emotional core of it, and she really, I think, owns the part and is really terrific in it. It's got that, that feel that we always talk about these, the indie movie, the quote unquote indie movie, and this is that, this is, a quintessential, little independent Little Miss Sunshine kind of a movie. It's got that vibe to it. And on that level, it's a little bit annoying. I've never been a really big fan of this guy's work, Mike Mills. I think this is the best movie he's done thus far, but actually kind of by far. And I think that has a lot to do with the cast, because I think everybody in the movie is really well cast and is interesting and has levels. I think Greta Gerwig's character is really fascinating and fun to watch. And I think Elle Fanning is just becoming, a much more interesting actress with each movie that she does. We're going to talk about her in the next movie as well. And I'm a fan of the movie. I don't think it's great. I think it, like I said, I think it suffers from being, your quote unquote, like Sundance indie movie. I think it's much better than Captain Fantastic, Eric. I mean, much. And I don't even think it's in the same level. Captain Fantastic was almost unwatchable.
Every generation needs their running with scissors.
I don't know, but anyway, what I'm saying is that I like this movie, and I think a good deal of how I responded to this movie is because, like I said, I was that kid's age in 1979. I was exactly that age, discovering a lot of stuff, and they captured that time period perfectly. 1979 was a big year for me. As a teenager, a lot of stuff changed in my life, and it's a big year for everybody who turns 14 or 15 in that time period. It's big for everybody, but because this movie takes place when I turned 14 and 15, that's one of the reasons why I think it added to my enjoyment of it. And again, I think Annette Bening is great. Is Annette Bening going to get nominated for this? She's got it, right?
I think so.
Yeah. I mean, she's Annette Bening, and she's good in it. So there you go. All right. So I'm saying, yeah, Colin, you said yes. And Eric, obviously you're saying no.
Yes.
To 20th Century Women. Okay. All right. Well, Eric, tell us about Live by Night.
Okay. Well, this is the latest directorial effort from Ben Affleck. He's once again directing or adapting a Dennis Lehane novel, in this case, Live by Night. Ben Affleck in the movie is set during Prohibition. And he plays a character who was a war veteran who has since become a petty crook. He spends his time back from the war ripping off sort of backroom poker games and whatnot. And this gets him in trouble with some of the mob, but also gets him noticed as well. After he spends some time in jail, he becomes sort of protected by one portion of the Boston mob. I can't remember if it's the Italians or the Irish. It's one of them. But he gets sort of recruited by them. Brendan Gleeson plays Affleck's father in the film. He's a police captain who ends up having to do some favors for the mob and compromise his own positions while his son is in jail. So Affleck's character rises up. The levels of the mob, and he gets sent down to Florida to basically supervise their rum operation during Prohibition. This leads him to a number of other characters that he has to do battle with down there, including he ends up hooking up with Cuban revolutionary, one of several, one played by Zoe Saldana. Chris Cooper plays a police chief down there who's has some connections to the Ku Klux Klan, a member of which is ripping off several of the mob's operations. So he has to sort of negotiate truces and whether or not he's going to take this guy out himself. There's a lot of things going on in here, and we haven't even mentioned Elle Fanning, who plays Chris Cooper's daughter, who is sort of an ingenue. To be an actress, but she gets involved with some shady materials as well. Sienna Miller plays a mob mull who is Affleck is in love with early in the film. So there are a lot of relationships here, and there's a lot of subplots going on in what seems to be sort of, you know, kind of a sprawling Godfather-like epic. And it's a lot of material to get through in just a couple of hours. And even though you have all these things going on and so many characters and so many potentially fascinating themes about the time and crime and religion and racism and all, you know, all these things that are sort of conflating sort of occupying space, this movie has almost no momentum whatsoever, which is really kind of shocking coming from Affleck, who we have praised here. I know I certainly have praised throughout his directorial career, Gone Baby Gone, The Town, Argo, obviously. And this movie has none of the sort of the energy and the momentum and the sort of the grasp of storytelling that Affleck has so far to date been very successful with. I don't know if this film was somehow cut down at all, because it seems like there's just a lot of corners that are cut here, some things that could have been expanded upon to be the kind of the greater epic that this film clearly wants to be. There's a voiceover by Affleck that's really boring and really on the nose. There's a lot of really good actors on display who get far too few scenes or just seem to get kind of wasted and tossed aside. Chris Messina is not one of them, who plays Affleck's sort of friend and henchman. He's very good in the film, but even when they start to do like comic bits in the movie, it almost seems like it's something out of a much different movie. And I'd much rather see that one, because it's the only time this movie seems to have any kind of energy. It's really kind of a shocking disappointment from Affleck, the director.
Okay, we got a break here, and then Colin and I will let you know what we thought of Live by Night. That's Ben Affleck's new movie. Eric, not a fan, but we'll come back after the break, and we'll tell you what we thought of it right here on WGN. Welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. We are live in the Allstate Studio, 7th floor of the Trip Tower, and we've got the Monday morning movie reviews that were happening right now. We're talking about Ben Affleck's new movie, Live by Night. Eric Childress, Colin Suter from eFilmCritic.com, RogerEbert.com, join me every week to talk about the movies. Welcome back, Eric.
Thank you.
And welcome back, Colin.
Hello.
All right. Eric told us about Live by Night and was very disappointed in it. And Colin, where are you on this one?
Yeah, disappointed as well. And Eric touched on, you know, material there is to get into this film, which is just over 2 hours. It's a lot. And it feels, like Eric said, it's almost like trying to cram Godfather 1 and 2 into one two-hour movie and getting a really sort of jumbled experience for what is supposed to be an epic, or what is supposed to feel like an epic gangster film. Perhaps this movie would have been better off being a miniseries or of some kind so that things could be fleshed out a little bit. Because when you're watching a two-hour film, you expect a little bit of more in the way of momentum. And I think that is the problem here. Affleck is very in tune with the time period. I think if there's one thing that is present in this film that is sort of a trademark of his, it's the dialogue. I think the dialogue does still have some punch to it. You can tell that Affleck puts a lot of effort into that part of the film so that, you know, it's not dry. But it doesn't feel organic in terms of its storytelling. There, you know, he falls in love with Zoe Saldana in this film, and that feels very much wedged in there. It feels very forced. It loses whatever momentum it had, you know, in the first 10, 15, 20 minutes. It goes away pretty quickly, or at least once he gets down to Miami, it really gets bogged down in a lot of these other little subplots and outside characters coming in. There's something to be said about, you know, working the KKK into this Prohibition-era gangster film. I think that's a good thing to put in there for a film like this and have it resonate somehow, but it doesn't. You know, not much to this time period anyway. And so, yeah, I don't think it's quite the disaster some are making it out to be. I just think from a guy who's had gone 3 for 3 in terms of his directorial efforts, the fourth one is the clunker. And, you know, I think a lot of it just has to do with the story and the structure. I think the time period is terrific. There's clearly, you know, the technical people who put this film together really did their jobs beautifully. But you walk out of it thinking, I feel like I've seen this movie before, and I feel like I didn't really need to see it again. I'm still looking forward to the next Ben Affleck film, but this one was a disappointment.
Yeah, I'm with you guys. I might have liked it a little bit more than you guys did, just in terms of, I think there are set pieces in the movie that are really terrific. There is early in the film, there's a bank robbery car chase scene that I think is great. You mentioned, you know, the look of this movie, the costume design, the sets, the art direction, and Robert Richardson shot this movie, correct?
Mm-hmm.
Yeah. All right. Beautiful. Incredible cinematography. So technically, it's a beautiful looking movie. They've got the look, they got the feel perfectly. It's a gorgeous movie. One of the most beautiful films I've seen in a while in terms of looks. Affleck just seems to coast through it. I really didn't care about his character. He just seemed like a kind of a black hole on the screen. There was nothing there. You got a guy like Brendan Gleeson. He's got like 4 scenes in the movie, and he's strong in it. I think the guy who plays R.D. Pruitt, the guy from the KKK who he makes a deal with, Matthew Mayer, tremendous, mm-hmm. tremendous in this movie. Now, Eric, you mentioned Chris Messina. He's unrecognizable, number one.
Yeah.
Two, he gives the best performance in the movie. It is such a terrific performance. And I think there are single performances in the movie that stand out for me. Like, I think Chris Cooper is good in the film, and he's got some really nice moments. The whole Elle Fanning subplot about her, in the revival tents, trying to shut down the casino, that seems forced. There's a really long scene between the two of them in a diner that just seems to go on forever. And there's no emotional connection to it. I think the first half of the film, actually, I was with it. I was with it. But then the second half of the movie, that's when it all kind of falls apart for me. It just feels jumbled. And you're right. There's too much going on. There's way too much going on, and he doesn't handle the story very well. Some of the dialogue is great. I liked, you know, I thought Sienna Miller had some really nice moments. I loved Anthony Michael Hall's cameo. You know, there's Anthony Michael. What the hell? There's Anthony Michael Hall. He's in one scene, and I loved him in that. I thought that was a good scene. And, you know, just to watch the three of them, because it was just basically Messina, Affleck, and Anthony Michael Hall. And that was like one of my, I think that might be my favorite scene in the entire movie. So he got the look right. There are moments in the movie that I think are really cool. Like I mentioned, there's some shootout. The final, the big climax at the end, the shootout stuff, nicely filmed. So I don't know. But I'm not recommending it. I was disappointed. And like you guys, I found it to be a jumbled mess. Very few things to grasp into emotionally. Again, technically done. It is the weakest movie that he's made. I think by far it's the weakest film because it's the only one that I'm not recommending out of the four that he's directed. It's the only one that I haven't recommended. So I was disappointed by it, but I think I found more merit in it than you guys did. So, but we were all basically disappointed by the movie. Yeah. You know, after three really terrific movies, it really is kind of sad to see that. But again, technically a beautiful looking movie. Like God, the photography. Just he's one of the best.
No, I agree with that. I have no qualms with the look of the movie, but you know, sometimes, you know, it feels like you're looking at a photograph as opposed to a moving picture.
Oh, I agree with you. I totally agree with you, but that photograph is really beautiful.
Yeah.
Cuz that guy's one of the best DPs in the business, man.
Yep.
And he shot Magnolia, so he, you know, he's all right by me. All right. What do we got next week, Eric? We're going to take a break and come back and talk about box office with you, but
yeah.
Let's find out what do we got next week.
Well, while I'm at Sundance, you guys are going to be watching a Triple X movie and an M. Night Shyamalan movie.
Right. So, okay. But I will say this. I don't like the first Triple X, but I like the one with Ice Cube.
Okay.
That's it. And as far as the new Shyamalan movie goes, I can't stand him. He makes terrible movies, but I love James McAvoy. So it's like this.
Yeah.
I've got this weird sort of conflicted feeling about it. Because the idea of watching James McAvoy play 23 different personalities, I'm like, yes, I'm all over that. So, all right, Colin, you get some rest. We'll talk to you next week.
All right.
All right, and when we come back, Eric will join us to talk about the box office, as we do every week on the movie reviews. Hey, welcome back, everybody. Nick DiGilio here on 720 WGN. Hi. We're live in the Allstate studio on the 7th floor of the Trib Tower here till 5 a.m. We're going to talk about the new tokens for the new version of Monopoly. They're changing the tokens, and then we're going to talk more about board games and reminisce a little bit about that as well. My dad is going to call in and tell a joke because it's a jokey time. And we've got a Blackhawks Express, an unfortunate Blackhawks Express from an unfortunate weekend for the Hawks. Not a good weekend for the Hawks. Hopefully it'll get better. All right. We just reviewed all the new movies with Colin and Eric, and Eric is heading off to Sundance, and we'll get reports from Sundance, as we do every year, while he's there. And right now, though, we're going to talk about the box office. All right, Eric, are we ready to talk a little box office?
Oh, yeah.
All right, Hidden Figures, $20 million, bringing its total up to almost $55 million. This is a hit.
Oh, yeah. This is quite a hit, and
yeah.
I think it's only getting started. Clearly, it bested Rogue One last week. Just at the last minute, and now 2 weeks in a row, and I think it's headed for some really hefty Oscar nominations next week.
Yeah, I'm with you. I agree. When are the Oscar nominations?
The 24th.
The 24th.
Tuesday.
Tuesday.
Next, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, to the 24th.
Yeah, so next Tuesday.
Mm-hmm.
Okay. We'll have to. We'll definitely keep our eyes peeled for that, and we'll talk about that. And so, yeah, Hidden Figures, and I liked it. I think it's a good movie, and I like the performances in it particularly. I think it's a solid and it's a crowd pleaser, you know, and clearly people are enjoying it. And I think that's cool. So Hidden Figures, $20 million this week. Number two, La La Land, $14.5 million, bringing its total up to $74 million. Are they increasing the theaters now? I mean, obviously,
yeah.
It was
they've
in IMAX.
Been
it was in IMAX.
Steadily too. Increasing it. And I think it's only like 1,700 theaters or something like that.
Mm-hmm.
I didn't see what the theater count was this weekend, but it was $76 million. And here's something interesting, is that in the history of Lionsgate, I think they've only had 11 movies ever reach 100 million, and like 7 or 8 of them are like Twilight, Hunger Games, Divergent, something
right.
like that.
Right.
It only needs to reach a little over 119 million to best Fahrenheit 9/11.
Mm-hmm.
So it would become the highest grossing, like, technically original movie released by Lionsgate.
Oh, all right. And it looks like it's going to do that.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, obviously.
Speaking of Oscar nominations, it's going to hit double digits.
Yeah, no question about it. And it's a great movie. Well, it was my favorite movie of the year.
Yeah.
Number three, Sing, $13.8 million, bringing its total up to $233 million. These guys are making hit movies. They're not necessarily good.
No, but they've got a brand, and you know, they keep, as long as they keep advertising with the Minions, in some respect, people will know what company it's for.
Yeah,
and I mean, I think the thing is like right around $400 million worldwide right now, and you know, they make these movies, animated films, on the cheap too. I mean, so like, this only cost $75 million, just like Secret Life of Pets. And Secret Life of Pets was the most profitable movie of 2016.
That's crazy.
So Sing is, it's headed, it's, it might hit $300 million. It's,
are they, possible. Is Illumination, are they doing another Minions movie?
Despicable Me 3 comes out this summer.
Oh, that's right. Okay.
Yeah.
And they're, of course, the Minions will be in that.
Well, exactly.
Okay. All right. Boy, oh boy. But making, mm-hmm. making money. Yep. Number four, Rogue One, A Star Wars Story, $13.7 million. Its total is almost $500 million in the States. What's it got worldwide?
Yeah, it's this weekend it's past $980 million worldwide.
Oh,
so we'll be hitting $1 billion this week, which will make Disney the first studio in history to release $4 billion films in a calendar year.
Well, so what were the other ones?
Zootopia,
uh-huh.
Captain America, Civil War, and Finding Dory.
Oh, wow.
Yeah.
Jeez. Each one of those made over $1 billion.
Over $1 billion. And Jungle Book made like 970 or 430 or something like that.
Wow.
Yeah.
Wow.
And Doctor Strange is over $700 million.
Wow. They're doing all right.
They're doing just fine.
Yeah, and they've got that Beauty and the Beast thing coming out in a few weeks.
Yeah, say hello to another $300 million in the States here
for
that.
That's going
to
make a ton of money. I you know, I know a lot of people who are very excited about that movie.
Yeah, that movie's going to be huge.
Yeah, monster. Okay, and Rogue One's great, by the way, as we've, you know, reviewed it. Fantastic. All right, number five is The Bye Bye Man, $13.3 million. I guess that's okay because it must have cost $1.
Yeah, it's fine. I mean, there's some speculation of whether it cost $12 million or like $7.5 million. If it made $7.5 million, it's most likely headed to Hitsville. If it cost $12 million, well, it might need a little bit more.
Mm-hmm.
It'll drop off huge next week, as these movies tend to do.
Yeah.
So it's yet to be written, but you know, if it loses money, it's not going to lose much.
Yeah. Six is Patriots Day with $12 million, almost $13 million. That's got to be considered a disappointment, right?
Yeah, I'm actually kind of really surprised at this. I actually thought this movie was going to be number one this weekend. I really did, based on what Lone Survivor did, based on what American Sniper did. And I think I got to put this on Lionsgate in the marketing. And I mean, this is going to sound terrible and all, but in the marketing, you notice they really kind of focus on the actual event. It almost seems like it's just a recreation of the marathon. I think if they would have made it, marketed it a little bit more about the actual hunt for the terrorists,
yeah,
it would have been more appealing to people. They would have thought like, oh, I'm not going to see, I don't want to go see the tragedy, the bombing, but I'll go see, watch these two idiots get caught.
Right.
You know, so.
Is this a 2017 release or is it a 2016?
It's technically a 2016 release. It's been in 7 theaters since Christmas Day, and it was doing well. I mean, it wasn't doing quite the numbers of those other movies, but it looked like it was online to do like over, you know, mid-20s this weekend. And I mean, it's not like the reviews are bad. The reviews have been pretty good for the film. I just think that people saw this and they saw the bombing and they're like, I don't want to go see that movie.
No, I think that has everything to do with it, Eric. I really
do.
I think it's still pretty fresh, you know?
Mm-hmm.
So I think that's why it didn't do well. Now, when we were talking about Monster Trucks, which made $10.5 million, not good.
No.
But what was it? You said you had a story behind what's going on with Monster Trucks.
This is really kind of fascinating. What you may know that this movie has been delayed for like a year and a half.
Yes.
Like Colin sort of mentioned the fact that they had to go back and they redid the special effects and things like that. So this thing kept getting pushed back further and further on the schedule. I think it was supposed to be released originally in 2015.
Wow.
So Paramount, which did not have a good year last year at all. I mean, Ben-Hur, the Turtles sequel bombed. Allied didn't do very well. They had a really horrible year, other than Arrival and Cloverfield Lane. Those were the only really two success stories they had last year. And Senses might clear that. But so they knew that they had this turkey on their hands, and they wrote this film off in like September on the books.
Oh, they did?
They wrote it off $115 million.
Oh, man.
Last year, 3 months before this movie came out, they wrote off $115 million on the books.
Wow.
Yeah. And if you look at Paramount's slate for this year, it's almost exclusively sequels and stuff.
Mm-hmm.
New Transformers movie. I mean, Baywatch is coming out. All, you know, all name recognition type movies.
Yeah.
So.
Wow. Okay. Oh, boy, Paramount.
Oof.
Number eight. Geez, we forgot to even mention this one. Sleepless with Jamie Foxx. I even forgot that came out.
Yeah, well, they just screened it for critics.
$8.4 million. Not good.
Barely advertised. Open Road is not particularly good. You know, I mean, they're not good at opening movies that people like, let alone movies that are not even going to screen for critics.
Yeah.
I saw the original French version of this movie, Sleepless Night.
Yes.
Which I'm not as big a fan of as some people are. I think that movie is basically just a kitchen fight with a movie around it. everything I hear about this movie is just kind of mediocre, and what was the point?
Yeah. I saw the trailer. I even forgot. I didn't even, I should have, I could have made plans to see this.
Yeah.
I even forgot it was out. I swear to you, I forgot it was out. And we cut a promo for this segment, and I mentioned it in the segment. And I forgot about it.
Yeah.
Okay. Number nine, Underworld Blood Wars, $5.8 million, bringing its total up to $24
million. Yeah, it's going to be by far the lowest grossing in the U.S. We might finally be rid of these movies.
Yeah, we got that another Resident Evil coming out.
Yeah, but that's already making money overseas.
Good
so,
Lord.
You know, if it maybe it makes enough, it won't quite be the final chapter.
Number 10, Passengers, $5.6 million, bringing its total up to $90 million. That's got to be a huge disappointment, right?
It's a big disappointment. Yeah, I mean, obviously the reviews are not strong on the film, and to get those two people together in a it's a high profile sci-fi movie around the holidays, and it can't even clear $100 million. It's a huge disappointment all around for Sony.
All right, now didn't crack the top 10. Live by Night, we reviewed earlier, and we were all disappointed in it. Some more than others. $5.6 million, that's got to be a massive disappointment.
Oh, it's a massive bomb is what it is. I mean, it's a $65 million film, and, I mean, this thing might not even clear 15.
Man.
You know, this is, I mean, Warner Brothers did themselves no favors by pretty much getting the word out during award season that they had no confidence in this movie. It's been in a few theaters since Christmas Day. It, of all the movies that were like the limited release movies, your Patriot's Day, Silence, even Monster Calls and whatnot, this movie was doing worse than all of them. It's clearly the people who saw it, I mean, the reviews have not been good, obviously.
Yeah.
It's in like the 33% of Rotten Tomatoes.
Right.
There's just nothing compelling people to go see this movie.
Yeah. I was curious about it. You know, when I first saw the trailer, I was like, oh, man, I can't wait to see it. It's Ben Affleck, period, gangster movie. This is going to be great. And then as it got closer and closer to release, it just felt like, uh-oh.
Yeah, they didn't screen it for critics during award season. They didn't send out screeners of this movie.
Yeah.
And Warner Brothers is usually pretty good at, even just getting out there movies that, might get a nomination or two.
Right.
They did nothing. They didn't even attempt to get a screening up of this movie. They didn't, the screener, we were just told no. So they basically gave like a vote of no confidence in this movie pretty early on. And I think they just knew that they didn't have an awards contender and that people were not going to dig it.
With the with this happening, because, he's in a producer on it, he directed it.
Yeah.
And he co-wrote it. Is this going to affect his relationship with Warner Brothers? I mean, he's given them a Best Picture and he's given them three hits. And
well, not only that, but he's now heavily entrenched in the DC universe.
That's right. Yeah, that's what I meant. Is that going to affect that at all?
Well, I mean, I don't know why Warner Brothers would turn on him now. I mean, I think that this movie probably got made strictly because of his relationship with the DC universe.
Yeah.
You know, forget about the best picture and all that kind of stuff. He's like, you're going to give us a Batman movie? We'll let you do whatever you want.
Right.
You know, and he's been attached to other projects too there. I mean, like, you know, he was going to do Stephen King's The Stand at one point.
Mm-hmm.
I don't know if he was attached to It at any point, but his name circled around a whole number of projects. And then eventually he settled that he was going to do his own Batman movie, which I'm still not sure about.
Yeah.
But I don't see why they would be stupid enough to part ways with him now. Although even Affleck in interviews recently has been sort of talking up the idea, just like, look, don't expect me to save everything. You know, don't expect me to be the savior on this stuff.
Yeah. All right. Well, it'll be interesting to see what happens. I will say this. The best part of going to see Live by Night was the Dunkirk trailer.
Oh, yeah.
Good God, does that look good.
Speaking of IMAX.
Yeah. Oh, man. And 70 and 35 he's releasing
it? Yeah.
Good God. All right. So, listen, have a great trip.
Thank you.
We will talk to you live from Sundance. We'll figure out what the schedule is and get you on to do reports and all that
kind
of stuff. All right?
We'll do.
Have fun while you're out there, Eric.
Thanks, man.
All right, take care. There's Eric Childress. He will be joining us live from Sundance, as he does every year, with exclusive reports. All right, we got to take a break, and we'll come back, and we're going to talk about the new tokens in the Monopoly board game.